There goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, North Dakota State fans? This is your host, Ross Uglum, publisher of Bison Report on 24/7 Sports. Joining me shortly is going to be Trev, and we just want to give everybody a heads up. I know I've been crowing about our VIP base expanding and our budget expanding and you know how great the audio quality is. Well, Trev's playing hurt. You know, we had a computer go down, so Trev's gonna be on speakerphone. So we just want everybody to know that if it doesn't sound like your normal crystal clear Bison Report radio, we just had a few technical difficulties. But the number one thing we do on this show is give the people what they want, and what they want is a big time Bison Athletics weekend. And that's what we have. We've got a massive mid major showdown with NDSU and East Tennessee State in the Shack. ETSU is the number three mid-major team in the country. The Bison, obviously the preseason number one Summit League team. That's big time. And also big time is Nicholls State in for some round two action in the FCS playoffs. Football is going to kick at 2:30, and hoops is going to kick or is going to tip at 7. Dive into the news very briefly. We've got Tanner Volson, Balfour, North Dakota, nine-man legend. Tanner Volson, Remington Award winner, signing with the Giants practice squad. Potential change to the redshirt rule as far as the four-game rule to potentially kind of avoid what's been going on in major college football as far as guys that are established deciding they want to transfer, so just quitting, stopping playing after four games. Not intended to stop true freshmen from playing four games and then coming back the next year. That is not what they are trying to do. And with no further ado, because like we mentioned, we had some technical difficulties, we're going to bring on Trevor Gebhardt. Trev, how we doing, buddy?
Living large down in the South, Ross. And I really do apologize if people do hear trains, planes, dogs, all the above. I am coming to you live from my parents' screened-in porch. You know, at the time of recording, it is in the evening. My daughter's sleeping in a room that if we did this, she would hear me and she would wake up, and then the missus would be very upset with me. So making the best of what our situation is. So definitely want to apologize, but hopefully something is better than nothing for the people.
Yeah, if goal number one of the Bison Report radio podcast is to give the people what they want, goal number two is definitely not to anger Carla. It's really high on the list.
Yeah. Smart. Happy wife, happy life. That's kind of how we roll.
So. Exactly. So let's dive into Nicholls right away. Are these guys for real? And the reason I ask is one of the worst forms of football analysis, which is, of course, the transitive property. And I just see the 38-7 beatdown NDSU put on UND. But a 24-6 beatdown Nicholls put on UND as well. Neither team, you know, like got into the 50s against the Fighting Hawks. Both teams kind of shut them down. And if you looked at those two scores, you know, 38-7 and 24-6, you might not think there was a huge gap between NDSU and Nicholls.
Right. And if you go look at their schedule throughout the season, they've beaten Central Arkansas, who is obviously the 8th seed and who Illinois State is facing this week. They did win the Southland auto bid. Then they, of course, beat Southeast Louisiana by one to end their regular season, then beat UND. So they've got, you know, quote unquote, three playoff wins. You know, I don't know if for real is the correct term, but formidable probably more so. You know, I don't think they're going to pose a serious threat. To say that's impossible is not out of the realm. But a teams that I would say for real would be like James Madison, maybe Weber. Then of course, you know, your South Dakota State. I think there's about as good of a second round team, that NDSU probably expected, before the bracket was released and before they knew much about them. They have weapons. They got guys that can tote the rock a little bit. They got an athletic quarterback who can create plays with his legs. So you definitely need to be prepared because it is the playoffs. And if you don't show up, you will get beat. Now, that being said, I do think that the transitive property isn't an exact science, but you can get a good gauge from it. And I just think up front, they're just going to get dominated. And that's where I think the tipping point will occur in this matchup overall.
Yeah, and it's funny you say up front, because when you played against Georgia Southern or Sam Houston State, a lot of what was heard through the ruckus of the FCS media, through you know, Facebook, through whatever, message boards, what have you, was that you guys couldn't handle the Southern speed. And that is another, this is another case of folks talking about Nichols being a bad matchup for North Dakota State because of that Southern speed. Talk a little bit about the quote unquote Southern speed when you played, and whether or not that's a real obstacle for North Dakota State this weekend.
Yeah, I don't foresee it being a real obstacle. I mean, you never know until you actually see it. But you know, like you said, we've played plenty of teams that have way more speed and athleticism. I mean, if you took some of those guys that we went up against, like we did a 7-on-7, and you took those same athletes and you stuck us on a basketball court, or maybe we did a decathlon, we'd probably get beat 10 times out of 10. So there's definitely athleticism to be had there, but the beauty of Saturday is, in the past, we're playing football, and there's certain ways to kind of neutralize that speed. You know, if there's a huge disparity and it's that big of a gap, well, yeah, then you'll notice it. But you can slow teams down and you can wear them out. And that's what we've done. That's what people have come to know and love about North Dakota State, or maybe hate if you are not a fan or don't appreciate greatness. But one thing that we had as a mindset was everybody has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. That's a famous Mike Tyson quote. And that's just what we did. We basically brought the hammer every single play. And usually, guys that are typically more finesse do not like that. It's very rare that you get a combo where you're very finesse and very physical. Not many teams and individuals can possess both. And I feel like in Fargo, we have a really good balance of both. We're fast enough to where we can keep up with pretty much anybody. But it's not tipping so hard one way that it takes away our physicality. So I think as far as like being able to run with them on a play-by-play basis, you just rely on your strength and conditioning to wear them out.
Yeah, and one thing that I've, you know, I was just on Bison 1660 doing my Friday spot at 5, and I got the Nichols and Sam Houston comparison as far as, you know, having a quarterback with gaudy numbers like a Briscoe, having, you know, the four wide, and even down to a guy that we'll talk about in a little bit, but like Sam Houston having PJ Hall, who's an NFL guy. And I don't know if Sully Leish is a NFL guy, but he's a darn productive FCS guy. Chase Forcade is the quarterback for Nichols. Does he give you that dude vibe, like a Shore or another quarterback, maybe like a Christian, because I don't think he moves around quite like Taron did, but does he give you that vibe of a quarterback where if this guy goes nuclear, he could cause problems for the Bison?
Yeah, I mean, Chase Forcade is the type of athletic quarterback that if he has the game of his life, there could be issues that are some serious adjustments need to be made at halftime. And, you know, if he gets hot early and they get up to a 7-0, 10-0 lead, they're going to believe that they belong. and in their minds they're going to go, we knew it all along. And when you get that type of confidence in this type of game, scary things can happen. So I think taking him out of the game early, I think the crowd getting into the game early will be huge. But the thing of it is you need to establish the run game, and you need to ground and pound and hang on to the ball for a long period of time. Now, they have a running back that is certainly more than capable of doing that. So, of course, Julian Gums. Yeah, that's how you pronounce it,
yep,
right?
Good player.
Yep. So I just don't think up front they're going to be able to hang with the D-line of North Dakota State. And then the pass rush alone, I think, is going to neutralize Forcade's playmaking ability to extend drives and extend plays. So he has that capability that is in his arsenal, yes. But as far as the matchup goes, is like with him being able to do it solely, it's too much. I think it'll be too much for four quarters. He can maybe do it for a half, maybe three quarters. But for four quarters, I think it'll be very daunting. And I would say if they were to come out with a win at the end of that, right beside it would be Chase Forcade plays the craziest game we've ever seen.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what we're always looking for if you're trying to take down the Bison is the dude, and that's something that you mentioned over and over again with whether it was Shakir Bell or guys that were the dude but maybe didn't quite get it done and forced the L, like maybe a David Johnson. The other squad needs to have like a star effort. Usually the Bison don't get beat, you know, by just being dominated as a team. Somebody usually goes off, like Khalid Abdullah and Brian Shore did, like, you know, you mentioned Bell. I mean, it usually takes a prime individual effort, and a prime individual effort can definitely be achieved by Sully Leish. 11 sacks this year. He had 26.5 sacks coming into the season, darn near 40 career sacks. 6'2", 270, basically plays three tech, will slide in and play a little bit of nose just to kind of mess around on passing downs, but is not your defensive end. And that's what we've been talking about all week. I had a chance to sit down with Trey. I had a chance to talk to Radens. He's not going to bring his noise from the edge, which makes him unique. You know, most of the premier pass rushers that you face are edge guys. They're you know, my guys, right? Trey Pat, hashtag pass rush guy. How much more disruptive is interior pass rush?
Sorry, you cut out there for a second. You're talking as far as like disrupting the pass game, or
yeah, how much? I'm talking about interior pass rush as opposed to, you know, gaming for an edge rusher. Because I happen to think that gaming for an edge rusher is easier than gaming for, you know, your Aaron Donald type, where he's just going to whip a center or whip a guard. Right.
Yeah. Guys that are playing a three tech or interior, they can win off one move. And it's a sack, like right away, it's demoralizing. The quarterback's not even, if it's a seven step drop, he might even be halfway through his drop and then he's sacked. If he's under center doing a seven step drop. But if you got a guy that's playing an interior D line, he's that long and that big, if he wins off his first move, you're in trouble. And luckily, Trey Lance is athletic enough to escape those plays. But if he starts landing punches early, you know, if he gets a sack or two in the first quarter, now his confidence is high. They're rolling, and everybody else around him start believing. So similar to 4K, you just got to basically neutralize that one guy that can potentially be that disruptive. So I think getting bodies on him early will be important. Getting him running east and west early will be important. And even attacking him, challenging him, saying, okay, we know you're really good. You did it in the Southland, but can you do it against the Missouri Valley's best? And if he shows that he can do that, well, then you kind of adjust the play calling a little bit. Not a problem. It happens all the time. But certainly guys that are that big and that long, you definitely need to game plan for it. And the fact that if he's getting bodies on the quarterback early, that could pose some serious threat, especially if it causes a turnover. And that's really your biggest concern. So I think there'll be tuned into it. I'm not really too worried about that being losing focus and not seeing sight of that. But again, just being on your P's and Q's and making sure that this one guy is not solely beating you.
Yeah, and that's, you know, one thing I did talk to Raidens about, and we'll play Dylan's interview right after this, was it is tough to, you know, plan out for those guys, because you can double them with both the center and the guard. That's fine. But as far as, you know, you can't really chip. You can leave a back end to block, but they're just disruptive, man. They screw all sorts of stuff up for what most teams are trying to accomplish, moving the ball down the field through the air. And a big part of that is if you've got a 6 foot, 270 pound defensive tackle who wants to get up the field, run at him, run trap, run draw, you know, do things to make him pay attention to the run game and not be able to focus on getting upfield and getting in Trey Lance's face over and over again, which fortunately for NDSU, they're good at all. I mean, they don't run a lot of trap, but they're good at all those things. They're good at making Sully play run, because if he's just going upfield, I know that Bison fans, and frankly, I think really highly of both Nash and obviously Zeej, it's still going to be a long day. He's a good player, a very, very good player. Trevor, I wanted to talk to you about the health of this team. Really, really healthy North Dakota State. Barty Ogbu is one guy that won't play just because he just got out of a walking boot. But, man, you look up and down the depth chart for Butler, and you look at the depth chart for Saturday, and whoo boy, are they really similar. What is it about that program? Because I know, like, Gio, you know, shredded his knee, and LP shredded his knee, but I still felt like for as much football as North Dakota State played, which was, you know, 11 or 12 regular season games, 3-4 playoff games, overall, they had really good injury luck. And that, I think, comes a lot from the strength and conditioning staff, the workload management by the head coach on down. What makes NDSU such a player-friendly program?
So it's almost something that almost kind of feeds itself. I mean, certainly the strength and conditioning, that's no secret. Everybody knows about Jim Cramer at this point.
Yeah, we're not breaking any news there.
No, one of the best at his job. And this is something that I always kind of said myself. We can't win in June if we don't win in I'm sorry, we can't win in July if we don't win in June. Can't win in August if we don't win in July, so on and so forth. And that starts in the weight room. And it starts with that preparation. It starts with making sure you're just taking care of your body in terms of recovery, and taking care of your body in terms of what you're putting inside of it with your diet. But as far as it kind of feeding itself is the depth. I mean, everyone says, okay, next man up, next man up. It sounds cliche as all get out. Every program says that. Well, when you have the depth that North Dakota State has, and you have guys and dudes waiting that are second and third string, okay, if you have a load management situation, or you have a blowout situation, or you have a guy that maybe needs to sit out a day in practice or sit out a few reps in practice, you have people on your roster that can come in and get the job done almost just as well as the starter, sometimes better. So when you have that many guys that are able to spill by taking reps without diminishing the quality of play, that gives you so much confidence by sticking other people in there. If someone needs to come out and nurse something for a quarter, you know, it happens all the time. So I think just the preparation all the way back into spring ball, getting good on good and making sure that you're getting enough licks with full pads, but not enough to where you're diminishing your body, but then also building it up in the off season. We were working out twice a day. I mean, a lot of us were up at anywhere between 4 and 5 a.m. Working out, going and working all day at 8 and 10 hour shift, sometimes manual labor. A lot of the guys did that, and then coming back and running at night. And when you're doing that, you have no choice but to fuel up as much and as fast as possible and then get to bed, because you know that you got to get rest for the next day. So when you go through that type of preparation for 3 months and Kramer's in your ear, it takes quite a bit to get you off that track because it's so ingrained into you. So there's a lot encompassed to that. It's very tough, and that's why the program is as successful as it is, and that's why they recruit certain kids But I think the biggest thing within that, and that gets overlooked and not talked about enough, is that depth piece, that other people can come in and the quality of football that's being played is not diluted to anything worse.
Yeah, and that's something that I think has really evolved as far as the program's concerned. Because I remember, you know, guy like Zach Vrah played a ton of football. So did Ryan Smith, as far as just a percentage of snaps. Crockett played a ton of football, especially his senior year. Specifically, I think, with the defensive line, Drevlo, LP, Cole, and Coulter, and then Cole and Kyle, those guys played a lot of snaps. And now, even studs like Greg Menard last year and Derek Tuska this year, they're still rotating. And I wonder if that's not something that they've A, figured out from a load management standpoint, and B, developed that depth of guys that are capable behind them. I mean, I can definitely remember after Cole and Kyle left just how much football Brad Ambrosius and Greg Menard had to play their first year as key contributors. I mean, they did not apparently feel good about the depth at all, because those guys played a ton of football. But I think those are very good points. I think you pretty much nailed a lot of the reasons why these guys aren't able to stay so healthy, and the emphasis on recovery, and just really, really impressive there to have as many guys available on Saturday as they are likely to. I talked to Trey, and I hope you guys have had a chance to check that out, either on the bonus pod, which is the audio, or the VIP video. Either way, you know, we'll be happy to show you guys that vid. I thought it was pretty good. One of the things we talked about was kind of the shift in narrative. So after the first month of the season, a lot of folks were talking about, and rightfully so, the crew chiefs, the tight ends, Ben Ellison, touchdown, you know, baby Gronk, Ben Ellison, touchdown, Ben Ellison. And then all of a sudden, Gindorf took that role over, and he was the one that scored just about every time he touched the football. And then just the freak, the Randy Moss of the tight end group, Babich, who, you know, is running probably about a 4.5 flat at 6'6", 255, or whatever he is, just creating impossible matchup problems for opponents. And then all of a sudden, the narrative switches to Phoenix Sproles and Jimmy Capurris on third down, and chiefly, frankly, Christian Watson and his beast-like abilities and run after the catch and ability to get deep and difficulty to take down, even on like the jet game. Just, I think, really, really impressive from a standpoint of athleticism and guys that they maybe weren't going to be able to get. And I asked Trey, do you think the tight ends could return to their feature role in this game against Nichols, and maybe even in the following game against either Central Arkansas or I believe Illinois State's the other possibility? You feel like the tight ends might be featured a little bit this upcoming weekend, Trev?
It's hard to say. And, you know, you hate to look ahead and talk ahead and whatever, because you got to look at the game in front of you. But I mean, if you're trying to get smart and, slice and dice future potential opponents and try to throw some wrinkles in that they haven't seen, I would wait. It's important to get those guys back involved, because as the playoffs roll through, they're going to need to be featured more, whether that's in the red zone, or nickel and diamond. So you can take the top off in more creative ways, but, it's hard to say. It'll be interesting to see whether they do or not. I don't think you necessarily have to. But just knowing that you have that in your back pocket just goes to show how dynamic this offense can get. So, there's only four games left potentially. It's just a matter of how creative I think the coaching staff and T-Roll wants to get with the offense to start the playoff run.
Yeah, I agree. I think you just need to find your matchup, and that's what they're going to do. And I would assume at some point that the matchup that's going to be taken away or attempted to be taken away are the wide receivers. And you'll start seeing safeties that would normally, you know, try to man up the tight end or be in zone. You might see them shade over to Christian Watson. Just, you know, if he has a four catch, 120 and two score night, people might have to start paying attention. I'm really impressed with that kid, and I continue to be more and more as the season goes on. I got to ask you, Trev, do we care about this attendance thing? Attendance in the Dome had dropped last year. The playoffs, at least the early round games, are apparently starting to get old, but your ticket prices have also basically doubled from 2011. And I it bugs me as far as the complaining about the attendance. I think would I like to see a sold out game? Yeah, sure. But to complain and moan about ticket prices like those, that's the issue. I mean, folks, if they sell a $15 ticket to 18,300 people, which was, by the way, the peak average for playoff football at North Dakota State is 18,300. If they sell a $30 ticket to 17,000 people, they're sure as heck making a lot more money than if they're selling a $15 ticket to 18,300. They're not losing money because they've increased ticket prices because, you know, 5 to 6% less people come to the game. That's not how math works. And it just, it bugs me, the small town, small time thinking, when if you're ever going to think about moving up, or if you're going to maintain, frankly, the gap between North Dakota State and their opponents right now, revenue is important, guys. Money matters. Team makers matters, and revenue in the playoffs matters. So when they start talking about taking tickets away from the students and selling them, or they increase ticket prices, or, you know, require a team makers donation to purchase season tickets, it's for the good of the program. It's nobody's lining their pockets. It's not like it goes to Matt Larson or goes to Dean, you know, it goes back into the program. So anyway, that's my soapbox moment. Trev, what's your thoughts on the attendance gate, if you will?
I mean, you know, from a player standpoint and a player's eyes, that's usually where my mind goes to first. Don't matter. I mean, you just want a loud crowd. I mean, you do appreciate when the stands are full. I mean, ultimately, that's what you do want. It does help. But at the end of the day, you're there to take care of business, win a football game, and that's not really your biggest concern. So I don't think the players are necessarily worried about it. In their minds, they just want to make sure that they can check Nichols off the list and then play either Illinois State or Central Arkansas. And they know that they're home again, and they'll know they have another shot. To host the fans. And it's, you know, it's kind of interesting for me to see it too, because yeah, the ticket prices have increased. That is going to diminish some of the attendance a little bit, you know, if it gets too high, which is supply and demand. But you do have to find a happy medium. The university does have to continue to make money. You got to remember, when you're hosting these events, even the university is not bringing home all the bacon in those instances when it's postseason, because right. The NCAA takes their fair share of it, which I do not want to go down that road. So I'm going to stop myself quick. So yeah, I mean, the ticket prices are the ticket prices. You know, the administration and the athletic staff, they're not just going to put a number out there just to be greedy. They want to make it work for everybody. They're not just doing it just to make sure that they can have an extra piece of steak at their Thanksgiving dinner. They're trying to make this university as great as possible and keep these experiences rolling for everybody. And, you know, if that means adjusting next year or years beyond from what they are now, it is what it is. So, but if they can keep increasing the price and the fans are, we're filling the stands and I was getting sold out, well, that's just simple supply and demand. I mean, if you're selling out in 10 minutes, you clearly know that you're not charging enough. So they're foregoing revenue for what they could be having to continue to make better facilities and to even, you know, maybe make a push for FBS. I don't know what the agenda is. But like
coach said, retention. I mean, it's yeah, staff retention.
You know, I mean, yeah, seriously. I mean, like, that stuff does matter. And NDSU is able to pay their coaches towards the upper echelon. They're not at the top of FCS, but I mean, there are enough fans buying tickets to where they're able to do that. So it does matter. You know, the complaining, it is what it is. I do think we do have a lot of fans appreciating what's going on. And that's for the sure. Biggest thing for me. I just want people to understand and appreciate how awesome this is, because it won't go on forever. You know, I want it to, obviously, selfishly, and, you know, having been a part of it myself and helping establish that and learning from the guys that came before me. So I think while this is going on, just appreciate it. soak it all in as much as you possibly can. And if that means you can afford to go, great. If you can't, still enjoy it with your friends and family to any capacity that you can. I certainly am going to be from 1,500 miles away. I would love to be there interacting with some of the best people in the world that I, you know, was fortunate enough to interact with in my time there. Because this is rare. I mean, this is, it's so rare that NDSU is literally writing the history books, and it's coming up in the media often. It's kind of beating a dead horse, but it's remarkable and it's almost mind blowing. So just appreciate it while it's here. And if you can go enjoy it in its fullest by being inside the Fargo Dome, please do. And if you can't, no big deal. It is what it is. And, you know, if the attendance is that much lower to where revenue is decreasing, well, they'll find their happy medium with simple economics and supply and demand and lower the cost.
Yeah. So, and that's one thing too, that I think you're not quite getting to, but I know is accurate. And that's that I think, especially some of these folks are FBS. I think that there is a, because NDSU makes it look so easy, I think that there is this idea that it is easy, and it's not. I mean, it truly, truly isn't easy. And it's something that I hope people understand. Just because NDSU wins every year doesn't mean that FCS football or Valley football isn't difficult, you know, or that these kids aren't trying hard, or what they're doing isn't deserving of having you, you know, show up at the game. It's really, really tough. And Trev would obviously certainly be one to speak on that firsthand. Real quick, Trev, before we get to the Dylan interview, what's your score prediction? I know we've already had Trev's take, but what's your score prediction?
I think I had, I don't have my computer in front of me, so I want to say I had, 38-7 or something like that on the...
You nailed it, 38-7.
Nice, good memory, huh?
Yep, and I'm right there with you, except I think that field goal that you think they kick is another touchdown. I had 42-7, so Trevor and I are pretty much in lockstep. Trev, buddy, travel safe back home. We really appreciate having you on, and right now we're going to run my interview with... You know what? If they had the award, I'm going to name him myself. Missouri Valley Football Conference Offensive Lineman of the Year, Dylan Radins.
Tackle Dylan Radins. Dylan, how are we doing?
Good. Very good. How are you?
Good. Coach Entz made mention of, well, that's not quite accurate. Someone asked him about all the postseason awards for this team, which I think can be expected. You guys are 12-0, kind of in dominating fashion. And you're an All-American candidate, certainly have already been named All-Valley, have some potentially some football in front of you. How do you guys kind of stay locked in and not read your press clippings and maybe not get so up when, boy, we're pretty good, look at this?
Yeah, totally. Obviously, you will love to hear about it. You love to get those awards. You're happy for your teammates. The whole team's happy together. I mean, we got 11. That's a Valley high. I mean, obviously, that's a positive note. And, yeah, so just being able to focus on the game plan, realize that, hey, this is just another game. Treat it like, obviously, it's playoffs. You're one and done, but you wanna prepare just like any other game. You don't wanna put the blinders on, basically. So just all those awards when they come in, we're happy. We'll recognize them, but then 24-hour rule. Forget about it. Move on. Prepare for the next game. So
I want to kind of ask you about the season as a whole, and it's not over, so I can understand if you're not ready to fully like reflect and stuff. Where were your expectations, and do you feel like they were exceeded? I mean, you guys lost some really good football players.
My expectations for Trey were obviously really high.
Yeah.
I knew he had the talent, but obviously he blew, I think, everybody's expectations out of the water. He did really well. For myself, obviously, I'm always pushing. I'm always going to have higher expectations. So, yeah, to a certain extent, I've reached some of those, but obviously I need to strive for more. And then a guy who's really – blew me out of the water was Cordell. Obviously, he's my brother. I expected the highest of highs out of him, but the way he's performed this season, I think he's probably the best offensive lineman we have on this squad. And just his ability to be physical and stay focused and only let up 0.5 sacks throughout the whole year as his first year starting is pretty astounding. So,
yeah, well, that was my next thing. I mentioned that in our 10 wild stats for the year. 222-ish, and I'm not sure if you guys are keeping it. Are you keeping it? Do you know exactly how many snaps you've played?
Not exactly how many snaps. We normally just track the rushing yards that we can
So I was basically told to subtract Zeb's passing attempts from the number because if Zeb was out there, usually the backup tackles were out there. So my numbers ended up 222 pass blocking snaps. Pass blocking, not total, pass blocking. You had a clean sheet.
That's awesome.
And Cordell had a half. What does that say about you guys, Coach Blazek, and frankly, Trey, for not sitting there and eating it?
Oh, totally. And it's a huge props to Trey. I mean, he can get out of sacks. He gets out of a lot of sticky situations. It's helped us a lot in that area. But, I don't know, me and Cordell push each other a lot in the offseason, and just as competing as two tackles went. I mean, we were about six games in, and we're just like, we haven't let up a sack yet. Like, hey, let's keep this thing going. And, yeah, it's just competing against each other. But at the same time, I mean, we look at Trey as almost our younger brother, so we want to protect him as much as possible. He's a new guy. We don't want hands in his face or anything like that. You just let him do his thing, and we've been able to do that, and it's been awesome. So,
one guy I want to ask you about is Nash, because you play next to him, and he was, you know, we're big into the recruiting, and he was like 355 pounds in high school doing 36-inch box jumps, this absolute marvel, and has obviously cut weight, you know, to play in this program. Mm-hmm. He was in a competition for that left guard spot, and it seems like he kind of ended that competition. Yep. What can you say about what Nash has done this season?
Nash is awesome. Great kid, first of all. He's got great athletic ability, obviously. You just said that. Just watch him be able to perform and learn the game. I think mentally, just being the first-year guy, I mean, even last year I remember, it was like you almost want to play hesitant because you don't want to mess something up, or just not being able to play full speed because you're trying to mentally grasp what the game is like and how to play physical and stuff like that. So there's been glimpses of him where he's been absolutely dominant because he's just locked in mentally. He's in that mode. So I think going into the playoffs, he's going to be more in that mode. And then even this experience this whole year is going to be good for him next year. And then spring ball, it's going to allow him to be a really dominant left guard next year for sure.
Who's going to be the really dominant left tackle next year?
That's a good question. I don't know. I always joke with Blazek. I'm just like, obviously, I'd love to do it. I mean, I love playing left tackle, protecting the blind side. It's been awesome. But, I mean, five best guys are going to play. So if I have to move to guard, if I have to move to center, whatever may occur, whatever we have to do, that's what we're going to do because it's all about the program. I mean, but obviously, I do love playing left tackle. So
right. Is there a guy, and the one that always sticks in my mind is Jalen Sundell. Is there a guy that needs to maybe find a little bit more time, or even just any young kid that's really impressing you?
All of them are pretty much about the same. I mean, they got a lot of playing time at the beginning of the year, and now it's coming towards the end of the year, and they haven't seen as much playing time. And so being able to get those guys playing time and then just, I don't know, all of them looking at them, I think Jalen's really good with it. Zach Kubis isn't a young guy, but watching him get reps at center and both guards is going to be huge. And then, watching him in the spring ball is going to be a huge part bringing in fall camp because I believe we're losing one guy and bringing in five, something like that. And so we're not going to be able to bring all the offensive linemen in fall camp. So encouraging those young guys, all of them, I should say, so they can perform well in spring because we're not going to be able to bring them all in fall camp. So that's going to be a big test factor for them.
For sure. So what is a little bit different about this second season is, I know you guys are always focused in that one game at a time thing gets preached more often, and I don't think it's a line. I mean, I legitimately believe it, but if you lose on Saturday, the season's over, and it will be like that until you either do or don't win the championship. Mm-hmm. What is the week like?
I mean, we're all always encouraging each other. I mean, you almost want to be like, it's human reaction, just be like, hey, if we lose, like, we ended the streak, like we're the ones who lost, like, but you don't want to play with fear. You just want to play with the love for your brothers. You play for the guy next to you, play for the seniors. I mean, it's big for us because we get to look up to Zeej. He's the only sole senior, and we get to see the passion that he plays with, and we get to match that because we want to do great things for him. We want him to go out with a big bang. So being able to keep the streak going, obviously that's always a goal. Keep playing for our brothers like Zeej. And things like that are kind of what drives us to keep going. It's obviously just a big brotherhood, but yeah.
So I want to address that because I would guess the coaching staff would kind of want you to have your blinders on and stuff, but you know that you've tied the record for consecutive FCS wins, and a win on win against Nichols would mean an extension of that. Obviously, a championship would mean a further extension of that. How special would it be to have your name as a part of the that number.
Yeah, it's awesome. Obviously, we don't want to think about the numbers. That's what we're preached to. But, yeah, you're going to think about it. I mean, I think about it all. I've thought about it a lot, and you're just like, that'd be so awesome. That's going to be so cool. That just the history of Bison, and you're one of the people that were happened to be a part of the Brotherhood, a part of that team that went for 30-so game win streak. And right. Just the tradition of that is definitely a striving factor to continue on in the playoffs. And, yeah, it's just we don't want to base our sole purpose off that because that's not the way we're going to do things, but it's definitely a driving factor.
I said something along the lines of being incredible to have the program do that twice, mm-hmm. but to do it twice in the span of like 7 years is yep. just is just absolutely nuts. So Nichols comes to the Fargo Dome on yep. Saturday. Mm-hmm. They have a really dynamite interior pass rusher. Mm-hmm. So more often than not, he's not going to be your problem.
Yep.
What do you guys do as far as an adjustment when the biggest threat to Trey is coming up in the middle?
Not too much you can do. It's not like you can slide side to him. It's not like you can do that a whole bunch. But strong run game. I mean, as long yeah. as we perform in the run game, obviously we don't have to worry about him pass rushing. But in the pass rush, they don't bring too many like blitzes where we're gonna have to be matched up. We're gonna have to be on them. So we've been practicing for 3 or 4 days now for him, and just the looks that we get, either a guy drops off, then we all bump inside to help Karst or help one of the guards. At the same time, I have no question or I'm not worried at all about our guards' abilities or even Carson's abilities to block the guy. I'm sure he's a good player, so he'll get pressure every once in a while, but between Trey's ability to scramble and the cohesiveness we have up front, I'm not too worried about it. So,
you guys have been fortunate enough to be cohesive, and how much does the training staff and Coach Kramer, but Bobby and everybody, not everybody gets to play all 5 offensive linemen all 12 games.
Yep. The cohesion there it's unreal. I mean, we're always pushing each other to get treatment. Kramer's pushing us to get treatment. Even in the off season, it was before this, before the whole season, we're preparing the way Kramer prepares us. I mean, everybody says he's the heart and soul of the program, and couldn't be more true. Just the way he takes care of us, even the 2 times we get to go in and lift with him a week, I mean, he's repping us to get recovery, repping us to eat, keeping our body weights up and everything. So just the whole brotherhood of not just the football players here, but the staff and the coaches and everything, it's definitely a cohesion that works, and it's cool to see. So,
top thing you guys need to get done on Saturday?
Run the ball hard. Run the ball well. I think the crowd will get into it once we run the ball well. Maybe get 2 guys or so with 100-plus rush yards. And being able to do that, I mean, then it'll open things up for Trey in the pass game, and it should be no big deal. I mean, they say they like to run a lot of man, but if they're going to do that, then the run game should be pretty easy. We can run off the guys off the edge. So, yeah, it should be good.
Thanks, Dylan.
I want to certainly thank Dylan for his time and thank the North Dakota State Sports Information Department for making him available. We really appreciate the guys that we got this week. We know they're higher profile guys and, you know, are certainly in demand. So we appreciate the 10 minutes or so to sit down with each of them that we received. That was certainly well, well appreciated. All right, let's dive into the hoops because we've got a major, major matchup at 7 o'clock tonight. Most of you are going to be listening to this early on Saturday morning. And tonight at 7, ETSU, Eastern Tennessee State, the number 3 team in the country as far as mid-major basketball is concerned, is coming to the Shack. Nate, do you know if anybody that was higher up in the mid-major poll came to Fargo while you were playing?
I don't think so. I know Fresno State came the year after Paul George was there, but they weren't as highly regarded then. It was a big win for us, but I don't know if you can. Mountain West is maybe mid-major, kind of the upper tier. But I don't think there's a bigger matchup than this. I know Southern Miss had a pretty good team when they came the year after I graduated. But as far as up there in the polls, this is going to be the best team that comes to Fargo.
Yeah, for sure. And we've been telling folks about this game basically since it was scheduled. You know, Coach Richmond and I addressed it in his preseason, sit down with me. And we've been telling folks, you know, that this is coming really behind only Gonzaga and Liberty, ETSU, right there in front of St. Mary's and the Northern Iowa team that NDSU, from all basically reports, scrimmage pretty tough down in Minneapolis. I believe that that preseason scrimmage was. We don't have a box score or any of that, but I think that went relatively well. At any rate, the Buccaneers of ETSU are number 3 in the country, and the Bison got absolutely drilled by the Bucks in Johnson City last year. Not one of their finest moments, not something that Coach was particularly thrilled with, but a chance for a little bit of retribution at home.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great team, and the thing with them is they don't have, like, a star player. I mean, they got 7 guys averaging between 8 and 13 points a game. They're going to play about 8 players, and 7 of them can all kind of score in different variety of ways. 3 of their top 4 scorers come off the bench. So, I mean, I think that tells a lot about their team. They don't really rely on anyone. They're a well-coached team. Steve Forbes does a great job. They won 24 games last year, returned their whole team, and I remember watching them in that semifinal matchup of their conference tournament, and they should have beat Wofford, and Wofford was a team that was borderline top 25 with Fletcher McGee. I think they'll let that one get away from them, but they averaged 78 points a game. They only gave up 66. So this is a team where if NDSU's shooting struggles continue and they're not consistent on the offensive end, this is a team that has the potential to run you out of the gym if you're not ready to play.
Yeah, for sure. They're 8-1 this year. The only loss is to KU, but before you get too scared of them or, you know, convinced that they're invincible, they do have close wins over Arkansas, Little Rock, App State, and Winthrop. I don't know where those clubs are at this year, but not exactly Titans. We're talking single possession victories. We're talking less than double digit victories. They've been in some close games with some mid-majors. So despite their lofty ranking, it's not like they're absolutely drilling everyone they play, but 8-1 at this point in the season is 8-1, man. The Bison would certainly kill to be 8-1 with maybe a loss at Kansas State or having maybe grabbed an upset in that game and lost a different one. Winning is hard in the non-conference for mid-major clubs because sometimes you got to schedule those bye games, and those are difficult. Like you mentioned, they've got a number of guys averaging between 8 and 14 points a game, no real star. I do find it's interesting that their number one leading scorer, Trey Boyd, does not start. He comes off the bench. What's that like as far as having their number one gunner come off the pine and get a bunch of shots up?
Yeah, it's definitely a little different. I know as a coach, you'd say it's not about who starts the game, it's who finishes. I think he just kind of rides the hot hand. I mean, they've had multiple different leading scorers in all their games. It's different to prepare for because you got to think about your rotation and your second line. You don't want to take too many starters out because their second unit or guys, those 3 guys who come in are basically starters. So you don't want to have too much of a drop off when you go to your rotation as well. So it is kind of tough to prepare for from that perspective. Maybe a guy like Vinny or Tyson need to stay in the game, or whoever you feel for in the starting lineup that needs to stay in to kind of weather the storm with their second unit. But yeah, it's different to prepare for. You don't always have a guy averaging 14 points a game off the bench like they do.
Yeah, no question about that. Just a balanced team, a team that likes to play fast, an athletic team. And like we mentioned, they're an elite group. They're an elite level, non-power five club. And it would be, in my opinion, a potentially a season defining win. And then I'm not trying to put, high expectations on the game. I'm not trying to put a bunch of pressure on folks, but this game could really reevaluate how the committee looks at North Dakota State, because you've got not a ton of the non-conference schedule left, and it hasn't been a disaster, but it certainly hasn't gone the way that I think they would hope. I don't think they're real thrilled to have that Utah Valley loss on their record. I'm not convinced they wouldn't have probably rather beat Stony Brook, but that I would say the rest of the non-conference games are pretty, in my opinion, I think it's pretty clear what's going to happen. I would say that, and we'll talk about this in a second, but that Northridge team is bad. They're going to beat Northridge. They're probably going to beat Montana State at home, though they just had a really quality game, I think, against South Dakota State. And they're probably going to go out to Marquette and lose. So you have sort of set in stone, stone-ish, what's going to happen. The tipping point then is this East Tennessee State game. And I think it honestly could be the difference between a 15 seed and a 14 seed in the tournament, or a 16 seed and a 14 seed in the tournament. I think you have to have a resume win if you go, say, 12-4 in the Summit, which, by the way, is no guarantee. But right now, I'm not looking at North Dakota State's non-conference, and I'm not really able to hang my hat on a big-time non-conference win right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at their schedule, you like you said, you want to have those mid-major wins that are going to tell the committee, hey, this is one of the top mid-major teams. We need to put them against a little more underachieving high major or a really good mid-major as that 12, 13, 14 seed. And then if they don't have any really resume win, all right, well, you guys can be a 15, 16 seed. This is the type of game that kind of erases any bad losses it would take. I mean, Utah Valley, it happens, okay? We should have won the game. Didn't happen. Indiana State, you don't look at that game, all they should have easily won that game. Indiana State's going to be a solid program, win between 16 and 20 games. Stony Brook's going to do the same thing. It's a quality program that's been in the tournament. But they do want to see that win where you're proving yourself as, hey, this is one of the top mid-majors. They beat East Tennessee State, who's going to arguably win the SoCon. They were picked to win it. So I agree with you. This type of win can hopefully – I mean, the guys should be energized coming into the game, but this type of win can kind of turn around that non-conference slate. I mean, you can go into these last three non-conference games and get some confidence going before the conference season starts on the 29th of December.
Yeah, for sure. And that, like I said, that's a big time difference, I think, as the game that you can point to, you know, and if it goes the way that I was talking about, You push your record to 6-4, then 7-4, then 8-4. I probably lose to Marquette going in 9-4, and then you've got that Northland win in the non-con coming, and that would get you to 10 non-conference wins. You know, then a 12-4 Summit League, then you're 22 wins before the tournament even starts, and an 11-5 Summit League. The 20 win mark and getting into the mid-20s for the committee, I think it's a lot easier if they beat this East Tennessee State game. I think it creates a statement for them, and they just need to see shots go in, man. It's huge. The game, it could not be bigger, and that's why both Nate and I are just, you know, almost begging you guys, get to the Shack. Go to the playoff football game. Go grab dinner. You'll have time to you know, hopefully – The football game would get done at 5:30, run over to B-Dubs, go over to Grand Junction. Nate and I just ate there the last time he was in town. Fantastic hot subs. Go get yourself a hot sub and then get your ass back to the Shack, because this is a big-time game, and it would be fun to see 4,500 people there. I think it would be really, really cool to pack that place for this game. If they don't win, though, if it doesn't go their way, and I cannot imagine they are – favored in this game, but if it doesn't go their way, they've really got a reprieve coming in Cal State Northridge.
Yeah, I mean, Cal State Northridge has really struggled to start this year. I mean, Mark Gottfried's out there. You guys might remember him from NC State. They did get a nice win against, I think it was Fresno State there at the end of November. So they definitely are capable, but they have lost. They've played a couple of good high majors. They've given up between the 80s and 90s almost every game. So they're really struggling defensively. They do have some guys that can score the ball. Like we've always talked about, it's always tough to win on the road, and getting off to a bad start like NDSU has, the previous couple road games. Hopefully they can get that fixed and get that win on Wednesday. That would be a nice win before welcoming Montana State, who you did mention did beat South Dakota State last night, I think it was, by 7. So that was a nice win for them. Would be a nice win for the Summit League to get that Big Sky win. I know that's kind of a little rivalry going on with the Summit Big Sky because it's got the Montanas and a lot of football stuff there. But, yeah, Northridge and Montana State would be some nice games to get before going to Marquette. And I'm just really excited for tonight. I think it's going to be a great – hopefully it's a great atmosphere. I know the guys are going to be pumped. These are the type of games that you get up for, and it would be a great mid-major win.
Yeah, for sure. Just check the line. Just check the betting line. It is East Tennessee State by 5. So North Dakota State not necessarily projected to get blown out, but also not picked to win on their home floor. So, you know, pay attention to that. I think that might be a source of motivation, but the true source of motivation is they need to win this game. They absolutely need to win this game. And I think, frankly, winning this game in and of itself would really redefine the non-conference for me. It would make a lot of the shooting woes and slightly disappointing start to the season go away. I can't underscore how big it is. What's your prediction for this one, Nate?
These are the type of games, at least the teams that I was on, Coach Richmond's going to have these guys ready, getting them motivated. I think they're going to get off to a good start. They've gotten off to terrible starts. And the big thing, the big stat that I think I talked about in my preview is, North Dakota State averages under 30 points a game in that first half. East Tennessee State gives up less than 30 points in that first half. So it's the start of the game is going to be really, really important because both teams, East Tennessee State guards worse the second half, NDC scores more in the second half. That's kind of with most teams, especially East Tennessee State, who's 8-1. But a quick start is going to be really important. They got to have a quick start, hit some shots early, get the crowd going, get them excited. I think NDSU can pull this thing out late, and I think they will, and kind of redefine, like you said, their non-conference slate with a couple of disappointing performances. But if you go 6-4, I mean, a lot of mid-majors are playing those high majors. They're not necessarily going to be 8-1 like East Tennessee State. So this game, we'll look back at it at the end of the year, hopefully with a huge win to help their seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, Easton, I mean, this is a elite level, you know, 8-1 and you're 3-3 in the country. That's kind of what you're saying. I mean, if NDSU was 8-1 right now, they'd be in the top 10 in the mid-major poll. I mean, I'll tell you that right now. That's just a fact. A lot of mid-major teams would kill to be 5-4 with a home game chance to get to 6-4. There's no question about it. I'm not as optimistic as you. I need to see it. That's where I'm at. I need to see it. So I'm gonna pick East Tennessee State in a close game, and hope basically to be proven wrong, because until I see this club put a complete game together and beat a good team, I'm gonna be nervous to pick them to do so. So Nate's got the Bison, I've got the Bucks. We'll see how it goes. Nate, thank you for your time, buddy. Want to definitely thank Trevor for his as well. And thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. This one ended up being a little bit of a longer show, so we definitely appreciate you sticking around. The number one way to support Nate and Trevor and I in this venture is to become a VIP member of the Bison Report. Folks, right now, if you were on a monthly subscription or a promotional monthly, like we did, I think 3 months for a dollar or 2 months for a dollar, and we've convinced you to stick around, which I hope we have, you can upgrade to an annual subscription, take care of your subscription from today until this time next year for half off. It's an incredible value, cost, you know, less than a trip to the grocery store, less than filling up your car. It is a dynamite value, and it's available, not like the 75% off, but like the 50% off. It is available to monthly subscribers to upgrade and to lower their per month cost for being a Bison Report member. And guys, I think we've proven over and over again that I don't just put the money in my pocket. We reinvest it into Bison Report. We bring you higher quality stuff. We bring you different stuff than we've been doing. And boy, we'd really appreciate it. Guys, get to the dome, get to the shack, Go Bison.